start with the Pledge of Allegiance led by Commissioner Garn. Thanks.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Commissioner Garn. All right, and we're checking before we go to our regular agenda if there are any public comments at this time. Seeing none, we move on to our first item, the work session on the review of the draft form-based code.
So I seem to recall last year, or not last year.
Yes, I could use a copy.
At your
Thank
last
you.
Meeting, you said you didn't want to do a page-by-page review of this. Just wanted to go through and get any last comments or feelings about it. Is that, do I remember that right?
Yeah, that's what I recall.
So how do you want to handle that? Just talk chapter by chapter, or?
I think any suggestions?
I think it'd be great to just go quickly chapter by chapter.
Right on. Yep. Okay. So we're in chapter one, which is general. Administration and enforcement, general requirements. Anything that we need to just kind of remember or note any recent changes in chapter one? Probably not. Everybody good to move on to the chapter two, the streets?
Yep.
Is this the best way to go through it, just in the order?
Do you have a
that
suggestion?
It comes to
Mary?
Us?
Well, unless anybody has any specific concerns, I mean, chapter one's pretty simple chapter. They've corrected the previous issues that we had related to the information about development agreements, invested rights, and then corrected all of the definitions so that they have the correct numbering on them, changing the pedestrian, the active transportation corridors to pedestrian corridors. Yeah.
Wait, so say that. Just say the last thing that you just said.
On
it changed what to pedestrian corridors?
So in, it's 1.3, number 3. So previously in item C under number 2C, under 3 access, so the bottom of page 10, active transportation corridors is where it start. Well, that's how it started before. But they were calling them active transportation corridors, and it was kind of confusing. So we asked them to change that to be pedestrian and bicycle corridors, so it was just very clear what they were for.
I have never liked the phrase active transportation.
Right.
Just because it then you always have to explain what it means. Okay.
And the numbering on the definitions is all updated now. So unless anybody else has any other concerns with chapter one, I think that one's looking pretty good. So in chapter two, we asked them to look at this to make sure that it was conforming with our active transportation plan.
Right.
And to fix the page numbers. And so they've done that.
Is that cycle track in figure 2.1, is that the city's preferred configuration?
Well, so there are three different configurations depending on the street type. So there's this, the cycle track. So some streets in the active transportation plan have the cycle track. Some have just dedicated bike lanes, and some have the Sharrow.
Yeah, and I am not an active transportation expert. I believe there are different ideas in terms of the placement of a cycle track relative to on-street parking and things like that, but I'm just not going to elaborate.
Section 2.4, that was also updated to reflect the pedestrian and bicycle corridor instead of calling it the active transportation corridor.
And I think we looked at the, I know we looked at the streets map originally. And I don't have any particular reason to rethink it, but
on page 19,
glancing at it on page 19, yeah. Okay.
I don't believe that they've changed anything in the cross sections.
Are there, and you don't have to know this exactly, but we just went through the subdivision ordinance, and are they consistent with regard to street dimensions? The form-based code and the subdivision ordinance.
This neighborhood street might not be because it has a 4 and a 4. Because we have a 50-foot right-of-way, not a 45-foot right-of-way. On page 22. So I think that is an error.
So what would need to change on this?
So our typical right-of-way is a 50-foot right-of-way. The park strip should be bigger on this.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. We can have better trees in our park strip.
All right, now we've started to earn our keep here tonight, right?
Anytime we get more trees, it's awesome.
Let's just open it up for any other questions on Chapter 2. Do we know, let's see, so what is the story with the figure on page 25? It has 5 different options based, and they vary based on what?
So
I mean, the top 3 are all 120 feet on Highway 89.
So they're based on the different configurations that the stations could take, and if those stations are at an intersection or if they're at a mid-block station.
Okay.
So if you look at the first one, this is a mid-block. That's not actually a station. That's just mid-block. But this shows the buses are going in the same direction of traffic, but there's only, you know, with a nice median in between them. And then the second figure down is showing a station that is on at a plaza or an intersection. So the north, like if we're looking at the blue bus, blue bus is northbound. So at that intersection, each side of the intersection, there will only be one station. So northbound would be through the intersection, and the southbound station would be on the other side of the intersection.
Right.
If it were a mid-block station, then you would have the buses either cross to drop off in the middle, or they would have doors on the other side of them so that everybody got off at one station in the middle.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. Last.
And speaking of BRT, just for your information, UTA invited the city council to contact them to go on a field trip down to UVX. So that's the BRT line that goes through Provo and Orem. And so when that comes up, when we get it scheduled, I will let you know, and any of you that want to go, that they said that we'd ride Front Runner down and then get off down at University Parkway by UVSC and then get on the bus and ride to the other station in Southtown Provo and then get back on the train and come back north. So that might be fun.
Yeah. I've never been on Front Runner, so that'd be fun.
Yeah, me too. Me neither.
Okay. We're good to move to three? And I recognize our new commissioner. This is probably this is a lot of information to absorb, but I think that you may know this, but this is like the last check in a, what, we probably looked at this over four meetings or something like that. We did talk a lot about the town center sub-district map. My memory doesn't give me the access to what changes we made, but if any of you...
got a lot bigger.
We added this, yeah, but right. It looks like that change has been made in the newer copies.
Okay.
The pit. It's not
right.
In ours. That
that's
isn't
right.
Updated.
Yeah.
Oh, no,
thank
right.
You.
It was going on a diagonal, and it needed to be straight. Yeah, the parcel line is right now. So on page 29, you can see that they've updated the neighborhood maps.
Yeah.
So over on Orchard Drive, the orange color, where Peachtree Apartments are, is it Peachtree? I think that's the name. Those are now in the Center and Orchard. And then they've included in the Boulevard neighborhood the the rest of Eaglewood Village. And then fixed the Northtown... Or the, what do they call those towns at 99? Lofts at 99, that is at Northtown Station, is now in the North 89 plan, or district instead of the core district.
Okay, I will pause and just talk through with you all the isolated piece of edge on the south. The character of those buildings currently is what? There's a few single family homes, there's a few like duplexes.
I think there's only three single family left now because they just tore out two of them for the town's Advantage Point, and the rest are all apartments on that side except for three single family homes.
So, I mean, one option is we leave it as is. Another option is we completely reassign that whole edge piece. And another option is we parse it more precisely. It could be that there are that the southern, some southern piece of that edge polygon should be reassigned to, you know, perhaps red. Depending on the use of those buildings. And, you know, especially where it's a peninsula surrounded on, you know, two or three sides by boulevard or core, if the uses don't beg for being maintained, it might be better for us to call out encouraging it to change character. So you're doing exactly the right thing. We have to look at the specific form of those buildings. I don't believe we talked through this before.
So those two houses that she's got the arrow pointed on, those have been torn down. So there are two houses to the north of town's Advantage Point. No, wait, there's just one. That's just one house, isn't it? That other one's an apartment. Yeah,
yep.
With the parking
just
out front.
Just one there.
So you've got two apartment buildings Yep, that's a fourplex. Then you've got this single-family home. Then the next two homes have been removed for the towns.
Okay, and where does the first home, as you move south, that has been torn down, where is that in this blue polygon? Okay, so there's the street. And is it the first south, first
no,
lot
north
south of that intersection?
No.
It's one to the east, one to the north of that?
Yes.
So something to talk through, okay, is that from that point south, we reassign that to a different color, not deciding right now which color, yellow or orange, red, pardon me, yellow or red, but and that we leave the pieces north of that as is, so that the, I mean, that's one way we could do it. Thoughts?
What was the original thought for having it listed as edge?
Because it seems more residential.
Just based on the houses that are already there.
That's what I would think, is that it's more similar to this.
So is the idea that those houses, the style of the houses right there, will likely change over time?
Well, I guess the question, in my mind, the question for us is what makes sense long-term as the eventual pattern of buildings and uses. And the reason why I picked that line is north of that line, you're giving the advantage to the single-family homes on the east side of Orchard, mm-hmm. that they're looking at relatively stable fabric or similar density across the street, at least for that piece. But south of that piece, it's either already in a townhouse density, or it's surrounded on all sides by boulevard or core.
So the only, this is a single family house that's left on the street. And then this right here, and it's in very, I don't think it's in very good.
Candidate for redevelopment.
Yeah, I think it would be a candidate.
Now we could, by the way, we could carve out some of that red across from the blue, maybe should be blue.
That's an apartment.
You know. Some of this potentially, should be reclassified to blue, possibly. That's a thought.
Yeah.
Isn't that a commercial building? Is that why? I think the red is
that's
all.
That's the gas station.
And there's an office building up behind it, too, right there.
I think that's why it's red.
And the three lots to the north of the office building right there across the street.
So, oh, across the street?
Yeah, those are red, and one could argue those shouldn't be red. One could argue those should be blue.
Yeah, I think they got a little carried away.
I don't think we meant for those to even be in there.
This be red.
What? Say it again.
Just the commercial.
You think that was a mistake? That they're
yes.
Not, right.
They're not supposed to go to that street. It's supposed to just encompass the office building parcel.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that wedge should be blue.
Or not.
Or not even included.
Not colored.
Or just excluded. Okay, excluded.
I think it's part of
only the only the office building property.
All right. So we exclude that.
Makes your edge look a little.
All right. So. I've chatted just kind of spoken aloud. Other thoughts on how we handle the blue wedge?
Well, and the two southernmost parcels, they're commercial, or is it just the one commercial on the very edge?
One is commercial, the other one's an apartment.
Oh, yeah. So I'm just thinking
so that's
of the
an
one
apartment.
Commercial one.
This one is commercial.
So, I mean, in that.
And that's nice. That is a really nice building.
So that's also a candidate that we could be looking at. And we should decide now whether we want it to be, you know, a proposal under the red or a proposal under the edge.
Right.
Well, if
sure just like make that decision now.
This puppy
happen there.
Right here
should be
Boulevard.
Not blue.
Right, Boulevard. Right. It should be Boulevard.
Should be the same rules as the, yes. the red, the Boulevard.
Yes, agreed.
If not core, I mean, that's
right.
prime
mm-hmm. spot
right there.
What's on the downhill side of that parcel?
The gas station.
The Sinclair is right there. You can see the canopy of the Sinclair right there.
All
right. So it's that, those other lovely businesses.
Okay, so we know that's going to be red. Let's go to the. I think that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
And then this guy is a pretty stable building. It's now are we across from the wedge that has been removed from the form-based code?
Not quite. Built by the office building.
Because you're still across from the office building to the east.
So this one is where this is adjacent to the truck topper business. This is the truck.
Well, and, I mean, that apartment complex might not be a candidate for redevelopment. So if it switches to red, there's really no consequence unless it gets bought up and a new proposal comes. And then the question is, would you want it to be a proposal under the Edge District or under the Boulevard? So you almost can go red on that one, too. I don't think it sends a message that...
Right, and I don't... Right.
That's a message we're going to have to answer to, I think.
On
people are going to see
like,
a lot of the recoloring and think that we're making suggestions.
Yes. This is... The government's telling me I have to...
Well,
sell.
Right. And the irony is, of course, that the brighter the color, the more we're saying we're letting the landowner decide their fate.
More freedom.
I mean, that's the irony, right?
Yes.
They might say, well, look at what the government's doing, and we're actually saying, you know, we're actually getting out of the way more here.
Yes.
But
you should be increasing your property value.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then north of that one, what do we have?
Then this one is a single family, and then this one's an apartment. So you have a single family, apartment, single family, townhomes, single family, apartments. So on that side of the street, there are three single families left.
And I feel like the townhomes that we approved for there are very similar to the rest of the core townhomes in nature. I mean, I think their look, to me, I thought they were pretty close.
Yeah.
Right.
So
you could go core from there up and just mm-hmm. eliminate the edge,
yeah.
the small edge district. So go Boulevard for the first two lots and then core.
So yeah, would the
maybe even right there.
Would the division between the red three. And the yellow be between this house and this apartment or between this house and this apartment?
Well, I'm noting the what's across the street and where it's the
yeah.
parking lot of an office building. That suggests to me that the unit across the street may not need to be blue. But, meh, you know.
Well, if you looked at it as a whole, I mean, let's just say that somebody came in here and they bought up
right.
all of these businesses and they could buy up all of these,
which
too.
Is not at all an impossibility.
Right.
Get
then they have a much better parcel to do something cohesive altogether if you include that
oh
line
my
there.
Gosh so that just is a compelling argument for me because the lot to the west that is clearly a really well cared for lot is man we want that to change
yeah
you know
yeah
and that may give them some motivation to change if somebody was to
if
come
they can
in.
Gather all those lots together
yeah.
So now we're talking about the southernmost parcels
so
going to what color?
Boulevard.
Red?
Boulevard.
Red.
Red.
One, two, three.
One, two, three. Yeah.
Okay, so that, anybody want to speak to another idea on those three parcels? Okay. Sorry.
I think that's great.
I didn't pause. I forgot to actually pause.
Message sent.
Okay. All right. And then north of there, You, Commissioner Ward, you were thinking aloud.
Yeah, and the question is there value in leaving it edge, or is there a downside of for continuity just going core, the yellow? And then you wouldn't have a sliver of edge there at all.
In that edge area, you would have two single-family homes, and every other parcel has multifamily on it.
I personally like the idea of a little more core on Orchard. I mean, we want to make Orchard, you know, the third biggest street in the city.
Yeah.
And we just have a couple lots on it right now that are actually core.
Well,
the logical transition from the boulevard.
If we're presented with a redevelopment, what area do we want? You know, so it seems like core is more flexible for multifamily housing.
We're not the decider. We're the recommender. So we could err on the side of giving them a simple, simplified map.
Yeah.
And then they can discuss this. I mean, you could even highlight, if you want, Sherry, to them that this was something that we talked about and
I think at the minimum you changed the boulevard on the southern three. Whether you eliminate the rest of it as edge, I don't really have a.
All right, so I think we're on the same page. The southern three parcels go to red. Let's do a straw poll. The two main options are the bulk of what's north of there to yellow, or the bulk of what's north of those three parcels stay blue. Okay, so make up your mind. Don't be influenced by how others straw vote. All right, how many like the idea of going to yellow? Right.
Your caution was noted.
Let the record show. Everyone.
It seems like an odd transition to have the edge in there between a boulevard and core area.
It's a recognition of what's there now, but we're trying to zone for what could be there, and so I don't.
Well,
if I owned that nice house that's there, I might get a little ruffled.
And remember how the map looks today, aside from the changes that you made at your last meeting. Those were just recommendations from the staff when we wrote this code and drafted it. So it doesn't mean that it's in stone or that anybody is expecting it to be one way or another. That was just our first take at it. Let's propose this.
I also think that the boulevard got expanded. And so originally it really did look like the edge of where we were discussing, but now it's sort of in the center.
Looks more substantial, yeah.
I'm envisioning a public meeting where this map is front and center with markers sitting next to it. I can't imagine people aren't going to want to have at it.
Draw a Sharpie on it?
Yeah.
I appreciate your optimism of the public participation.
I'm trying to remember if there are...
I don't know if he's going to have a marker or not.
Sherry, can you help me remember? Are there some... protections or considerations when a parcel in the form-based code area is adjacent to residential? There's some like edge.
Yeah, there are setbacks for the height when they're next to a single family use. So
and does that include across the street from?
No, it's just the adjacent if they share a property line. Because once you get across the street, I mean, you're already 60 feet apart. And then, they're 25 feet more to their front setback at least. And they're on that side, you're 20 feet back, you know.
Okay.
You're quite a distance away.
All right. Well, I think that we have exhausted that. So unless there's anything else on three, let's go to four. And, you know, we did talk through the uses pretty well, and there haven't been recent changes to that, I believe. Am I correct on that?
You're correct. They've just updated all of the things that we went through previously.
No more drive-through in the edge? Remember that was in there?
Right, right. So I'm okay to go to five. Anybody want to talk through four? Five is the meat of the sandwich.
I believe it's a sandwich.
My mind goes to the arts and parks because I feel like that is one in which we made some late tweaks to the setbacks, and it might just be worth looking at the buildings that are permitted in the arts and parks just to do a reflection on that. Of course, all of it is, you know, whatever you want to do, but that's where my brain's going. So it, I mean, the arts and parks, it is just west of the core. The concept is, some people don't like this word, but the concept is it's essentially an urban district. A mix of uses, walkable, you can see that with the storefront, stacked flats, limited bay, allowed in that just as they are also allowed in the core. So I'm okay with that.
On page 41, we talked a lot about the colors and the color palette. So item 3 there on page 41, that you can, the first up at the top, they've changed that so that the traditional historic colors such as that is brick, wood, earth tones, greens, tans, light browns, terracotta, grays, pale primary and secondary colors, and white and cream tones. And I think that if we find that that's not working, we could come back and amend the code to put more in. And it's just basically saying no neon green color, you know, neon back. Pink buildings with purple polka dots.
Wash yourself quickly. They ducked under that one.
They did indeed. Yeah, there's a crazy amount of detail in this. I suggest that we don't beat our heads against the wall and go through it again. Just acknowledging that we did in, I think, pretty good detail.
I think we did too.
Absolutely.
One of the more recent changes was the arts and parks. My recollection is we added 5 feet uniformly to the front yard setback. Is that correct? And did that occur, or do you have any comments on that?
Yes, that's what they did.
Six is not a section that I think that we did a lot of review on. You know, one of the nice things about working off of a template like this is, which the consultant team did, is that it has actually been refined and used in a variety of places, and it provides some comfort that these numbers basically work. Doesn't mean we can't or shouldn't change them, but. Julia Child thought through how much baking soda. You're catching my drift.
Noted.
Now I just want cookies. Cookies. Totally derailed me. Get to that moment.
So, staff or anybody, comments on Chapter 6, which is quite detailed. And honestly, I mean, the detail, it provides comfort, right? That we have more assurity of getting the kinds of products that we want as a city. Parking. I think parking, we spent some time on the parking requirements. I'm noting on page 63 it says add example. The example presumably is not actually code, but it helps the user, right?
Oh,
times and percentages. We worked on that a lot.
Yeah.
To get them. Yeah, and we looked a lot at that. And it, recall the shared vehicle parking, this table is not like, it doesn't follow national norms exactly, but what the consultant team did is they came out and they counted, they analyzed utilization in North Salt Lake to come up with this. So it's kind of ground truth to our city. I think we may have tweaked it though, right?
Yes, we did. Numbers written that tweaked it, but I don't see it tweaked. I think I had numbers written down that we tweaked them, but I don't think we got those, didn't get updated.
Well, are you able to go back to your notes, or
yes, so
or if you need us to talk about that, we can.
If we're looking at the table 7.22 on page 63, so I have down that the weekdays that we should change the hours, the segment from 8 to 5, and then on the restaurant line, that we reduce that 50% to 25, that the restaurant line go from during the day, that stay at 70%, you had 80, but I have 35% from midnight to 7 a.m. for restaurant, and then 70% for 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. on weekends.
So what would that row of numbers read?
Okay, 25, but you said you had 80?
I had 80.
Okay, Kate had 25, and then 80, then 100, then 35, then 70, then 100.
Right, and the idea here is that at that time, you add up you take the mix of uses and the parking requirements for that mix of uses, and then you multiply it by these percentages at any given time of day and add it up. And the highest parking requirement across the entire day or weekend becomes the actual requirement. And so if there, it's enabling a look for efficiency. And that's why these percentages matter. So when you have, but there's not, is there not, there's not sharing with a residential visitor, right? I think I asked this question before.
I'm sorry, I was over here doing math.
The residential visitor parking is not subject to being shared.
Correct. But didn't we say we wanted them to look at that? Because I have that written down. Shared residential visitor spaces with commercial units, and then uses, and then a question mark.
Yeah.
I remember you saying you wanted us to be able to do that.
Wouldn't a shared residential user utilize it 100% of the day?
They would during the middle of the night, but during the day they wouldn't.
So that would be the efficiency. You'd have to count that as 100% at night, but in the middle of the day you could count it at 30%.
It's not, it's the guest. So I had the guest parking, not the standard residential property. The residential guest parking could be the same as could be shared with the commercial.
I think that would be good to put in here. So add one more use category of residential visitor. Put in numbers. If the consultant didn't look at that, then you could pull national numbers.
And then on the next one, on the total parking reductions, I had a 0.5 crossed out and put 0.3. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Because they didn't change that, so.
Oh, my heck. We talked about this a lot.
Quite a bit about the parking reductions.
I have 0.4 on my notes, but I don't know.
Oh, maximum possible. Should say maximum possible, not total possible.
Point 0.5 meaning 50%? No, 0.5 meaning half a space
per unit.
That's why we need to show the example to clear that part up, because
we worked that through quite a bit in that work session.
Yeah.
And also that the reductions weren't as substantial as they needed to be, because it was for like the senior housing and the
right.
Offering a bus pass, the reduction was not substantial enough.
Yeah.
In the original numbers.
Do you think you have those notes of that from that work session, Sherry?
From the minutes? I mean, we have our notes that we wrote down.
Board. Because you remember we worked it all out on the whiteboard?
Yeah.
All the numbers?
Yep.
I think I took a picture of it.
Let me look. That would be super helpful.
Does anyone know the date of that work session? That would
the 12th. Wasn't it December 12th?
That would be so much faster than me.
Or December 10th. December 10th. I think. Could have been in November.
While she looks at that, I have a question about the residential parking credits, specifically the on-street parking credit, if I'm understanding this. If there's available on-street parking, it can count one for one with required parking that would have to be within the development. Is that what I'm understanding here? And that's available to any development. I don't know. I guess maybe someone with more expertise than me. That sounds strange to me. Why? What's the logic behind that? It feels like using public resources for private use instead of the private plan providing for their needs.
Well, we're trying to encourage commercial traffic. You know, to share it and to have less traffic, less parking spaces available in general.
That clears it up because it says non-residential. I was thinking this was for residential.
Yes, okay. So it's for commercial stuff because people want to park in front of the building to.
Great, thank you. That's exactly what I was wondering about.
We we did bump up the numbers in 7.2.3. I don't remember if that was how the different pieces fit together. I can't remember if
they're bumped up. So before they were separated, they were different in the core and all the other zones. So we just combined them into one. And the core numbers before were 0.5 instead of 0.15 on the first one. And then it was 0.15, and then the next one was 0.05, and senior housing was 0.2, and then total possible said 0.5, so that actually went down to 0.3. But I don't know if you meant that.
Well, why would we bump it down to 0.3 if some of the line items are bigger than 0.3?
I don't know. That's why I'm questioning that, because Kate didn't have that on her notes, but I had it on my notes.
Well, okay. So as you recalled those numbers, it does seem like 7.2.3 may reflect our conversation.
Yeah.
Well, and it can't be 0.3 because
right.
Just a space in senior housing, you're already over the maximum.
Yeah, and we didn't want somebody to be able to, you know, add it all up and then provide no parking. I would rather have our code do that. But the notion was that as a group and as a city, we're not ready for that. So unless we get more information or want to revisit it, does that table look okay to y'all? 7.2.3.
Yes, it does, Ted.
And then what about the restaurant line? I think the new numbers make a lot more sense. Here's one example. Midnight to 7 a.m., we're not going to have half of those parking spaces utilized. We just, you know, this is not the town of nightlife. You know what I'm saying? And then we're all good on that one, I suspect. Well, what about, go ahead.
It's funny you say that. That's the one that I thought was maybe even still high.
Okay.
I wonder if we
like
want
it could
to
even come down
60%
further
for that instead of the 70.
Oh, the 70 is relative to 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Or actually, and even the hours might have changed, right?
I was looking at the midnight to 7.
Well, midnight to 7, 35.
Weekend.
In my view, 35 is still high. Yes, I agree with that. What do you have as a recommendation?
I just agree with everything you were saying before. We're not gonna have clubs. We're not gonna be encouraging the night scene. It's
right.
So I would just bump it down a little bit. I'd go to 60% instead of 70.
Well, we were gonna bump it to 35.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's right. These are the old numbers.
Yeah, the 70 went to 35.
Right, they didn't make the changes that we had written down on this table. So the restaurant, the way I have it, would read across on the restaurant line would be 25, 70, 100, 35, 70, 100.
Okay. Wasn't the second one you said 80?
Oh, you had 80, sorry. And 80 on, so 25, 80, 100, 35, 70, and 100.
Sorry, yeah, never mind. I like that.
And then changing the intervals so that it's midnight to 8 a.m., 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., 5 p.m. to midnight.
It's a little tweak, but I'm not sure why we'd have 80 on a weekday and 70 on a weekend during the middle of the day. My suggestion is to just leave both of them at 70. So the second number would remain at 70. And then the residential visitor, I just want to call the question on that. This is less common, but is still done, that allowing a developer to say, okay, well, we have, I'm making it up, right? We have 40 parking spaces that are dedicated to units. Those cannot be shared. But we have 10 parking spaces for visitors, and they're on the, we're going to put them on the edge of the development, and they can flex. They can flex between commercial or visitor. And we're calculating it that way so that we can get an efficiency. And this table tells us how. And so we'd add a line item that says residential visitor, and then we'd put in a new set of numbers in that, which very roughly would mimic hotel.
Would that require language in every development agreement to allow residential parking in their lot? Or is that already a thing?
I don't. How is the logic of that in terms of the usage? Wouldn't visitor parking be variable? I mean, is the idea that people visit during the day and then those spots are open and so they're available for the commercial?
I think they'd visit more in the evening.
And the commercial would use it during the day.
So an ideal combo would be residential and office.
Right. Where the office workers leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I wouldn't say it mirrored hotel because I think it would be like 25% midnight to 8 a.m. and then maybe like 65 or 70 during the day.
Right, because they're not, the visitors aren't all sleeping over.
Or what?
Right.
Or less during the day and then more in the evening. So, you know, like maybe 100% from the 5 to midnight. Because most people are home after work, that's when their visitors come.
And we could, you know, we could do residential visitor, but just do an asterisk that we only let this happen in, you know. Commercial. Well, by definition, it wouldn't just be commercial. It would be a mix. Okay. I mean, that's where you would get the benefit, is if you had two uses intermixed.
If
but
it worked.
Anyway, you know. Does anybody want to argue either way?
Maybe that's a good way to do it. Just put an asterisk saying where this situation applies with commercial and residential. I don't know. Are we at a stall?
Well, when you think about it, it's not very many spaces. Right. So even if you had 40 regular
that's
spaces and then a quarter space per...
That's where it was headed. Sorry, Sherry, go ahead. What?
Yes, that is 10 spaces.
What's that?
So would you want to just say that they could use those 10 spaces, I mean, just straight across? Say they 10 guest spaces can also be commercial spaces? We've done that before.
I don't think it would be bad.
We did it in Williamsburg. That the 10 spaces, that the guest spaces are provided in the commercial when it's a mixed use. When it's a mixed use development, that the guest spaces are technically the commercial spaces too.
So if conflicts arise, what happens?
Well, there shouldn't be conflicts between commercial and guests. The commercial should know that the guests are potential customers.
But what if the business says, oh, your apartment visitors are filling up all my spaces. Nobody can come to my business. It's full all the time. What happens then? Like what's the negotiation between?
It's the developer's
signage
problem.
For the developer. So it would have to say.
The more likely is going to be the residents are going to be using it for their permanent parking.
Right, right, exactly. And I just wonder, are we handing down a potential conflict after the developer walks away and now living in this apartment complex or running a business next door comes with this this potential conflict? That what would they do in that situation then? Because then it's just two independently functioning
businesses. They'd have to enforce it themselves, have to be able to prove that the person there was not a customer of one of the businesses, that it was actually a visitor. So I think it's going to be hard either way to keep. You're not going to keep guests from parking in the commercial parking. That's not, I don't think that's
going to happen. That part's not the one that concerns me. It's residents using that visitor parking as their permanent parking.
So for that, what you'd probably want to do is just put a time limit, you know, like a two-hour parking.
Oh, that's a good idea.
During the day or during whatever hours, you know, that you wanted to.
So we could bag it. We could limit it to one or two districts. We could say we're only letting this happen in the core. Or we could say, you know, North Salt Lake just ain't that urban, and we're not going to worry about it. So you want to do a straw poll?
Sure. Or we can just...
Or if somebody wants to, yeah, right.
I would like to see it happen if only in the core. I'm not opposed to other areas because I would hate to see the redevelopment in the core have a lot of priority put on parking. Because as that redevelops, we've kind of just had a bunch of dead zones here already. And as we force developers to allocate so much property to parking, it changes the way that that can revitalize. So I would like to see that in the core, because no great city is like, oh, look at all that great parking they have in their core. So I would like to see it at asterisk to maybe the core, maybe the boulevard area, just because there is a lot of stuff that's going to change over there potentially in the next X amount of years, and I just would hate to see so much of it go to parking like we see right up here, that there's that huge parking lot, and it just changes the vitality and walkability of that area, I think.
Point. Yep. Kirkham?
I agree. That's a good point. Thank you.
I think so, too.
I'd be on board that.
Yeah. Sorry, Brandon. Why do I do this? Why does this happen to me?
Bees.
Brandon.
I'm still a little skeptical of the shared residential, but not at issue.
I'll convince you more. There's so much less residential there. So this isn't like something that's going to, because I think what your fear is coming from Foxborough, right?
Yeah, but also when I think of like Main Street and Bountiful, there are such little parking. It is a deterrent for me as a consumer to go to some of those businesses because I feel like it's too hard to get there. And I'm not saying build giant parking lots for that, but just a consideration.
Have you had trouble getting parking on Main Street and Bountiful?
Yeah. Absolutely.
When do you go there?
Every Wednesday and Thursday at 4:00.
But that's because you're there at a specific dance pickup, right?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, because I go to Main Street, and I actually feel like there's, like, sufficient parking there for when I go
to
Vito's or when I go to the bookstore. So I'm wondering what is making your experience different on Main Street than my experience, because I feel like they have sufficient parking, and I'm not deterred, except
for,
like,
if bottleneck, I go to, like... But the bottleneck is every day. For the dance studio.
Because that dance studio lets out at the same time.
And there's so many kids every day, not just the you know, pick up and drop off for my kids, those pick up and drop offs are cycling.
And those people aren't necessarily parking, they're using active zone. Like parking is
active parking.
Zone. They're parking.
Parking is the active zone.
The trade off is always which building would you yank in order to have more parking?
Yeah,
you
and
know
I don't
mean?
Like
that. And that's kind of the urban question.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you shouldn't have a dance studio there.
Or like Mooshin has that same problem. During the pickup and drop-off times, it's that parking lot is very problematic. But if you're not there in those minutes, it's like, oh, we don't need this much parking for Quiznos. But in those minutes, that is a bottleneck too.
But then the question there is, are the residential options using up the spaces to such a degree that it creates the bottleneck? That the bottleneck is always there because people who live there are just filling up the spaces.
And there is an intermediate party. The core party is the landowner. And the landowner can set... A, they can decide to do more parking than we're requiring. That's one thing. Two, they can, I said A and then two, I realize that.
With you.
Two, they can establish rules for how they're going to use parking, right? So.
Yeah, and then I think that's fine. That's great.
All right, so I think that the idea on the table is we add that line item, residential visitor, asterisk, only core and boulevard. Okay. That was a robust discussion.
Awesome. So if
good suggestion, Commissioner.
On page 64, we requested a change where we had a statement about them using their garages for parking and not storage. So that's been done right there at the end. And then the last chapter is chapter 8, your signs.
Right. Boy, that's going to be so nice to have this sign code.
You don't have to do another sign.
This is a big deal.
I don't know why I dislike them so much. I just don't like reviewing signs.
You don't like any signs?
You don't like
signs.
What?
No, I don't like reviewing applications for signs. That's why
we are done with that.
This.
Yeah. We're going to bring you more ordinances on signs soon for the citywide sign fund.
And we didn't spend a lot of time on the sign code, and partly because, like the landscaping, it's really well thought out, and it's quite detailed. If there are thoughts on this, it might be – I don't know. I'm just pausing if anybody has anything.
I think it's awesome how they have, the examples too. So somebody trying to look up what the city wants, it's right there.
Right. And thus brings us to page 77, which is left intentionally blank. Trying to think of a clever thing to say about it, but...
I thought we
all we are is dust in the wind, man.
I can't think of
where all the reels and all that stuff is right there, man.
So that is a formidable piece of code. Huh?
It really
right?
is.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Good work.
We should give them a standing ovation.
Yeah, well done. Good work.
Wait, awesome. Wait till it's passed.
Yeah, and this, I referenced consultants, but Sherry and team did more work than anybody, and I should have been referencing that throughout, so thank you, guys.
Well, the consultant did a lot of work. We just edited them to death.
Right.
But we do appreciate that.
We don't need to do any motion. Correct?
Right. So we had talked last time about inviting the city council to a work session on March 10th, right? Yeah. And I mentioned it to the city council last week during the work session when I was introducing them to that huge subdivision ordinance, and they all kind of like were not excited, I guess. They weren't like... So we're trying to figure out if that date is just not a good date for them, or if they'd like a different date, or what they would like us to do. If they want you to come to one of their meetings, or so I right now I don't have a work session scheduled with them in 2 weeks, but we'll be in touch to find out what that is. Because what I'd like to do at that work session is to give them the copy of the ordinance with all of these changes, and then allow you to have a discussion with them about what the ordinance does and why it,
right?
Why it does what it, why you want it, and specifically talk more about the districts and the type of buildings, kind of focus on that, and then strategize with them about what your expectations are on this public outreach that we need to do with the all of the people that live or own property in these sub-districts, because that's going to be a big zone change for everyone. And so we need to, you know, have some work, some open houses, and give plenty of time for public comment, because a lot of people, I think, are going to show up to those meetings.
Do we have those meetings scheduled?
We don't have them scheduled yet. I wanted to have you do a work session with the council first, and then so everybody understood the expectation on, so and so that we understand what the expectation for you and the planning and the city council are in those public outreach, so that we do it right for you when we schedule it. So I will stay tuned, and we will give you more details soon.
I think, given that we are, I mean, just factually less important than the council, right? We're not elected. That if it helps them by us meeting on their regular week, if they want to do that, then we should look at that.
And that's fine. We just suggested that date because they don't have a meeting next week on the 3rd because of the Super Tuesday.
Okay.
And they'll be voting and using this building. So we thought, well, would you like, where you don't have a meeting on the 3rd, do you want to come to a meeting on the 10th to do that? And I don't know if they have plans, or they just didn't, we didn't get into it because we had a very shortened work session because they had to get their professional photography was here to do all their pictures. So that took up most of my
time. Did they do them all like with the head turned like this?
We get our picture on the wall. And also Parks and Arts. All the boards should have a picture up on the wall, in my opinion.
Anyway, so.
And I only got, can turn and sideways.
And when I introduced them to the subdivision ordinance, I only had one council person go, "What? What do you mean that the subdivisions don't go back to the city council again?" There was only one person that did that. She didn't quite understand how that. And then I repeated it, and then she's like, "Oh." And I think everybody else kind
of. Of course they did.
So far, I think they're okay with it. Yeah. They didn't throw me out of the room or anything, so. They'll see. But we're planning on having that on their agenda on the 17th for them to adopt it. So hopefully, keep my fingers crossed.
So procedurally, if they adopt the form-based code, then outreach?
No. So I was talking about the subdivision ordinance
that
we passed on.
Got it. Sorry.
So on the 17th. But once we have a work session with them, then we'll have the public outreach and do all the public hearing noticing. And then you'll make a recommendation on the form-based code and the zone map amendment. And then they'll act on it.
But as further south develops, it becomes more desirable to a bigger.
Here we go.
What happens to you in the interim before this is finalized?
I just work on other stuff.
I mean, if a developer comes in and says, you know, hey, we're going to buy all this property.
We make them do a P district. How about that? If somebody comes in until it's adopted.
I just tell them that the parking requirements are decreasing and
they should wait.
I get that question all the time. I just tell them to wait till March.
That's a really good answer.
Right. You might want to wait.
You'll get to provide less parking. But we have, there's some big things coming up soon, so. That I can't tell you about yet. One of them, but it's cool.
Nice. Is any of it in the form-based code area?
No. Not this one. Not this one.
We're gonna do all this at their document.
She wants
one.
To bulldoze this whole area.
Well, actually, maybe that's good because we want this adopted first. So.
Yeah.
I meant even after it's adopted.
But I am pleased to tell you that the city council did not vacate Orchard Drive, and they left the parking on street the way it was in the middle. They get their on street parking just the way it was, the way you recommended it.
Okay.
All right, and then you were just reporting on council actions, correct?
Yep.
Do you have anything else that you need to want to report on that one?
Yeah, they approved Village Station site plan. They did not vacate the road. They let them have the on-street parking, and they did a small amendment to the noise ordinance. Right now, our noise ordinance, which is in Title IV, it's not in the land use code, it basically says you can't unload or load boxes from midnight to 7 a.m., and there's a particular business that does that that will be coming here, as well as FedEx and Lee's Market, who unload boxes in the middle of the night. So it's a code we haven't been enforcing, so we've changed that so that in the CG and the MD zones, they can unload and load boxes 24/7. And that is all the hints you're getting.
Okay. So our final item is the approval of minutes from February, is it the 16th?
Yeah.
Okay. So the 16th is correct. Any changes to the draft minutes?
That was one correction. It wasn't the 16th.
It was the 11th.
Okay. Yeah, so that has to be changed, the 11th.
Well, when you said 16th, I was like, my sister's birthday was the 16th, and that was a Sunday, so I'm sure it was not the 16th. I didn't notice it. I missed it too. So.
The chair would entertain a motion. Unless anybody has anything.
I'll make a motion. I move that we approve the minutes for the February 11th, 2020 Planning Commission meeting.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, great. That concludes our incredible journey tonight. Thanks, everybody. And so you'll get back to us on the date.
I brought Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, nice.
Pull those out.